Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for May 3rd, 2016. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be talking with Rachel Golub and Eric Vivier about signaling that controls the plasticity of innate lymphoid cells. As their name indicates, innate lymphoid cells are part of the innate immune system. They're similar to the T cells and B cells of the adaptive immune system, but unlike T cells and B cells, they don't respond to specific antigens. Instead, these cells are activated by a variety of stimuli. Innate lymphoid cells, or ILCs for short, are a heterogeneous population of cells, but they're classified into several subtypes, type 1, type 2, or type 3, based on how they develop and which cytokines they secrete. Type 3 ILCs can be further subdivided into different subpopulations. Two new papers in this week's issue of Science Signaling show that Notch and TGF-beta signaling control the balance between two different populations of type 3 ILCs. Rachel Golub talked to me from the Pasteur Institute in Paris, and Eric Vivier joined us from Aix-Marseille University in Marseille. The work from Vivier's group was done in collaboration with the laboratory of Gabrielle Bells at the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute in Melbourne. Innate lymphoid cells, or ILCs, are similar to the T cells and the B cells of the adaptive immune system. How are ILCs related to T cells and B cells, and how do they differ from T cells and B cells?
In the previous studies using clonal assays, we have shown that around 2% of the common lymphoid progenitors were able to give rise to B, T, NK cells, and ILC3. They depend on gamma-C cytokines family for their development, but they do not possess rearranged TCR or rearranged BCR at the surface, so they will not recognize and they will not respond to specific antigen. They are not coming from cells that started to try to be a B cells or a T cells, but they are derived from the same common precursor that differentiate really early on.
ILCs don't respond to specific antigens, so how are they activated?
They are activated by a number of means. They express cytokine receptors, IL-7 for example, but they can also, for some subset of ILCs, in particular ILC3, respond to IL-23, IL-1-beta, and as we will mention later, also TGF-beta. They also express a panel of cell surface receptors that have been characterized on other cell types. Coming back to ILC3 in particular, there is a subset that express NKp46, which is a natural cytotoxicity receptor, which is also expressed on natural killer cells that belong to the ILC lineage and also expressed on subset of ILC1s. Although we really don't know, besides cytokine receptors, what are the most important, if any, of those cell surface receptors.
I think I can add also that in the intestinal lamina propria of the murine ILCs, it's not possible to find some receptor that recognize pathogen also. So it seems that they are not in a direct contact with this pathogen or no direct recognition for the activation. So they really depend on this cytokine receptor.
So they appear to be activated not directly by pathogens, but by cytokines that are released by other cells that contact the pathogens.
Well, this is what is thought in the field right now. Although in other tissues besides the gut, we know that NK cells, for example, which again belong to the ILC lineage, can recognize directly some stress cells in particular. And there are also some earlier reports showing that some subset of ILC3 could be activated by some natural killer cell receptors such as NKp44. So again, I think that most of the questions around ILCs remain open. One has to remember that the identification of ILCs is very recent. In 2008, 12 groups independently identified those cells in different flavors, ILC1, ILC2, ILC3, in different locations, fat tissue, gut, lung, skin. But the biology of these ILCs remain to be explored in great detail.
Once an ILC is activated, what does it do? How does it respond to activation?
So mainly ILC release cytokines and this induce their expansion. And I think ILC right now can be considered as tissue resident cells. So I think ILC right now are considered to be the first responders to insults because their education is really done in the tissue, in situ directly. But there are direct or indirect interaction with adaptive T lymphocytes could be also important, or with dendritic cells. They can also recruit or activate innate population, macrophage, basophils, neutrophils, mastocytes, and induce isotype class switching. And they establish also an important dialogue with the epithelial cells to restore damage or to induce secretion of antimicrobial peptides.
Yeah, one could add maybe that they could be seen as amplifiers of the innate immune response, considering that maybe myeloid cells in general and epithelial cells would be the first cell to detect insults. And then ILCs could amplify the signal and shape the consequent adaptive immune response.
In the paper from your lab, Rachel, you report that notch signaling is important for the differentiation of one of the subpopulations of type 3 ILCs. How does notch affect ILC3 differentiation?
So notch is a conserved pathway, and it has been already extensively studied for the T-cell development. And what was shown for that is that it's important for commitment, but also for the late differentiation toward the different effector stage of CD4 T cells, toward TH1, TH2, and TH17. So in general, the notch signaling pathway is really highly related to cell fate determination, differentiation, and proliferation. So it's why we look at this ILC3 population in the lamina propria, because there were at least three different subsets, and we didn't know how they were related. So these three different subsets are the one that does not express the CCR6 chemokine receptor, or the subset that express, as Eric said earlier, the natural cytotoxicity receptor NKp46, and also the subset that does not express neither the NKp46 nor the CCR6. So we generated a mice model where the notch pathway was completely abrogated in all the lymphoid cells, and we found that this NKp46 ILC3 were absent in the lamina propria of the intestine. So the role of the notch pathway is to promote this differentiation from the double negative ILC3 toward the NKp46 plus subset. And these cells were considered as precursors. And their differentiation is related to the activation of NOTCH2 on the surface that stimulate important transcription factors like TBX21 that encode for TBET, or ROR-C that encode ROR gamma T and IHR. And at the same time, we also studied other mice that has a notch pathway constitutively active in all lymphoid cells, and we proved that these cells were now expressing more NKp46 at the surface. So we think that also the expression of the NKp46 is maintained thanks to this notch signaling pathway. So notch can be a regulator of this plasticity among ILC3 by controlling the NKp46 cell fate. And we think that is the coordinated action of ROR gamma T, TBET, GATA3, HR, and notch that maintains this equilibrium between the NCR minus and the NCR plus subset.
And Eric, the paper from your group reports that notch and TGF-beta signaling together cooperate to control the differentiation of ILC3s. How do they cooperate?
Well, as Rachel said, there is a major heterogeneity within the group 3 ILCs in the intestine. There are in particular two subsets of ILC3, one that does not express NKp46 and one that does express NKp46. So Rachel had shown, and other collaborators had shown previously, that Notch was indeed extremely important from the transition from NCR minus ILC3, so the ILC3 that do not express NKP46, to the cells that express NKP46 called NCR plus ILC3. We wanted to revisit this transition between the different subset of ILC3 using a mouse model that we have generated years ago. This knock-in mouse allows us to target selectively cells that express NKP46. So using this model, we have been able to fate map ILC3. And it was a big surprise for us to see that there is a new population of cells that couldn't be identified without this model that correspond to cells that have expressed once in their life, so to speak, the gene encoding NKP46, a gene which is called NCR1, but which then have lost the cell surface expression of NKP46 or never acquired stable cell surface expression of NKP46. So that was the first finding of this report. And then we asked if it's possible that, in fact, cells that express NKP46 are losing NKP46 expression afterwards. What are the signals which are involved in this transition from NCR plus ISC3 towards the NCR minus ISC3? And as Rachel said, Notch is involved in the transition from NCR minus ISC3 toward NCR plus ISC3. So we were basically chasing the reverse pathway. And using a gene candidate approach, we could show that TGF-beta was actually one of the pathways that counteracts the Notch pathway. So basically, Notch is promoting the transition of NCR minus ISC3 towards NCR plus ISC3, and TGF-beta is antagonizing this transition.
How do those different subtypes of ILC3s differ? What difference does it make physiologically, whether you have more of one versus more of the other?
NKP46 plus ILC3 secrete interferon gamma on top of the Th17 cytokines like IL-17 and IL-22 that are also secreted by the NCR minus ILC3. And they can be found at different places depending on the receptor, chemokine receptor they express. And since some of the NCR minus are also CCR6 plus, they will respond to a ligand that is expressed by the epithelium, that is CCL20, and will be able to secrete cytokines at different places than NKP46 cells that are more CXCR6 plus, another chemokine receptor. So I really think that they mainly secrete the same type of cytokines, but they will be stimulated differently at different places and at different kinetics. And also we should remember that this NKP46 is an activating marker of these cells, and they also express NKG2D that are also another activating marker, so they should answer to different type of cells, stress cells, as Eric said earlier. And these cells also express other inhibiting receptors, so I think the regulation, as what Eric has shown with the TGF-beta, is also highly important, because you need this regulation and this counteracting to maintain really tightly this homeostasis. And we know that if we activate too much or chronically activate a cell to secrete too much cytokines or too much inflammation, then we will go toward a pathology, disease state, and it's always a question of yin and yang.
Yeah, to complete what Rachel just said, I think this is one of the next frontier in the field of ILCs in general, meaning to generate mouse models in particular that can selectively target different subsets of ILCs so that we can really address the physiological relevance of these different subsets in vivo. Unfortunately, this is not done yet. We had the privilege to generate this model that could target the NCR-plus subset, but unfortunately, there are no models that could target the NCR-minus subset. So it's very difficult to address in detail what are the different functions of these cells. What I can tell is that we had another article published 2 months ago showing that the NCR-plus ILC3 that we could deplete selectively was involved in the control of the homeostasis of the cecum upon bacterial infection. Unfortunately, again, we don't have the model to deplete NCR-minus ILC3, so it's also possible that these cells may be involved in such homeostasis phenomenon, but we just don't know.
A lot less is known about ILCs than about other types of immune cells. And Eric, earlier you mentioned that ILCs were just relatively recently described for the first time. Are we getting there, getting to the point of being able to better study ILCs? I mean, clearly a lot of tools still need to be developed.
Yeah, absolutely. We have no time to recapitulate the history of lymphocyte discovery, but you know, the whole thing started in 1843 by the discovery of leukocyte to begin with. And then it took 150 years and a bit more than that actually to discover that there were a different subset of lymphocytes, B cells, T cells, NK cells, and then only in 2008 ILCs have been identified. So this is one of the reasons why there is so much to learn about these cells. Another reason is that most of these ILCs are actually localized in tissues. As Rachel said, they are tissue-resident cells for most of them. Probably the great exception to that may be NK cells, which are quite frequent in peripheral blood, but this is not the case for the other ILCs. So it's quite difficult to have access to these cells. Actually, it's one of the reasons also why ILCs have been identified so recently, just because most immunologists concentrate of secondary lymph node organs and blood. And again, this is not where you find these ILCs. And also, a last reason why we don't know much about these ILCs is that the models have to be generated, mouse models, as we mentioned earlier, but also to identify molecules that could be selectively expressed on different subsets so that we can target them using antibodies in particular. So the identification of the function of ILCs is definitely one of the great frontiers nowadays in immunology.
Another reason for them to not to have been seen so easily before is also because they are really in low number. So I think it's also it was one of the challenging beginning to look at these cells.
Rachel and Eric, thanks for speaking with me.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Eric Vivier and Rachel Golub discussing two papers published in the May 3rd issue of Science Signaling, one by Chia and colleagues and the other by Viant and colleagues. You can read those articles online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.